I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Joanne Darcy, and you're listening to High Performance Woman Podcast, where we're elevating stories of high performance women from across the globe. Here's what we have coming up for you today.
I think everyone has the potential to, but I don't think everyone taps into their own potential. You know, I think you have to find something that you're passionate about. Women look at job specs for something and say, oh, they're looking for five things and I've got three, so I won't apply because I haven't got all the experience. Like, men might only have one thing out of the five and they'll apply. So like, you need to back yourself. Women are operating in a very different landscape, and that's, to be honest, they're not full-time professionals. I mean, they're on sort of contracts with the RFU, but a lot of them are working in their spare time as well, or kind of managing jobs and training. So the challenges for them are completely different in terms of what a week looks like. But I do think it's become a real like benchmark for women in sport and for the whole industry in Ireland. And I think it has made brands look up and notice and say there is something in women's sport. I still think there's a lot of like lip service given to women's sport, a lot of people saying, oh yeah, no, we want to support it, but they're not actually following through on that.
My guest today is Aoife Clark. Aoife is the Director of Communications at the IRFU. And previous to this, Aoife was the Director of Communications for Lidl Ireland and Northern Ireland. She built this department from scratch since joining Lidl in 2008. And she looked after PR, internal communications, events, social media, CSR and public affairs. She was also integral in the launch of the award-winning partnership with the LGFA, the Ladies Gaelic Football Association, in 2016, which has become one of the most successful and inspirational sponsorships in the country. Definitely inspirational, I must say. Aoife is highly educated with two bachelor degrees and a postgrad diploma across various areas of business and also PR and event management. And she was also one of the speakers at the Women in Sport Conference in 2022 in the Aviva Stadium. And last year in 2023, was named one of the most influential women in sports in business. Aoife, very, very welcome. Absolutely delighted that you could join me here today.
No, thanks for having me, Joanne. It's good to be here.
Yeah, myself and Aoife go back a few years, having both worked together in Lidl. And you have recently also become a mother. So
yeah, I have a little boy, Cooper. He's 15 months old now. So yeah, it's great. It's been obviously life-changing, as they say, but it's been absolutely brilliant.
How was the transition, I suppose, from career into motherhood and that time you had off?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting, obviously, because I had taken a sabbatical a couple of years ago where I had 3 months off. But obviously, that was 3 months to myself. Mm-hmm. And this wasn't any of my own time. So I have to say, he's been a very easy baby. I had a very easy pregnancy. So he hasn't been too much trouble, touch wood. It stays that way. But he's been a pretty good sleeper and eater. So it was actually pretty good. I mean, yeah, it was obviously life changing in terms of like having to kind of look after him every day. And mm-hmm. But I was lucky, I had a couple of friends who were on maternity leave at the same time, so I never kind of felt too isolated or kind of cut off from everything. And I, you know, I kept myself busy every day as well. I mean, I literally was probably out every single day with him, just doing like buggy boot camps or meeting people. So like the time flew by. I took up my new job when he was 8 months old, so I actually left Lidl when I was on maternity leave. I never went back. Mm-hmm. But it's been absolutely brilliant. Yeah, I wouldn't change anything.
That's amazing that you were able to change roles, change companies, you know, shift your career, progress your career while on maternity leave. How did that all come about?
Yeah, so I mean, he was actually 3 weeks old, and I was actually out with my college friends for like a Christmas lunch kind of early in December. And one of the girls that I was in college with was actually working in the IRFU at the time. She was working in domestic rugby. And she said to me, oh, there's the comms director role is up. They're recruiting for it at the moment. She's like, I was going to give you a call, but I just didn't know where your head would be at, you know, given that you've just had a baby. And she knew that I loved rugby. And, you know, I just said, God, actually, I would be really interested. So she actually sent me the link for the job. This was on a Sunday and it had actually closed on the Friday. But I just said, you know what, I've nothing to lose. So I just literally that evening, like fired up my laptop and got a CV together and put it in. Not really expecting much. I kind of felt like within the sports industry in particular, it's a lot of people who are already in the industry maybe that get the job. So I felt like maybe they were just recruiting externally for the sake of it, but that there was probably already somebody lined up. So yeah, I just put my CV in. That was kind of, I think maybe the second week of December. I had within a few days a call set up for the first week of January, a Teams call with the recruiter, and it kind of just snowballed from there. So I spent most of January kind of prepping for interviews, and I got the job pretty much at the end of January. Well, the job offer. But the RFU were fantastic. Once they found out I was on maternity leave, they were like, no pressure, tell us when you think you could start. So originally I had planned to go back to Lidl kind of closer to when the baby was a year old, purely because I had a crash lined up that weren't going to take him till he was a year old. But I was just really lucky that my family were really supportive. He's the first grandchild, so obviously like the absolute pride and joy of everyone. And my mum is a pediatric nurse and she was due to retire during the summer.
Perfect timing.
So she actually was like, I said, look, I'd like to start this job a bit earlier than what I would have gone back to Lidl, purely because things like Rugby World Cup were happening. And I was like, this only comes around every 4 years. Like, I feel like I'd miss so much of a learning experience if I missed that. So yeah, I was just really lucky. My mum retired about 2 months earlier than she planned. And she took a bit of time off, and then she took the baby from July until he started crash in November. So yeah, so it was kind of crazy how it all kind of happened. But like, I feel like, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, but I feel like everything happens for a reason. I think it was a whole life change for me. And I think starting a new job in the middle of all that as well actually just worked really well for me in the end.
It's amazing because I think when people go on maternity leave, it can sometimes hold them back in their career. And I think maybe something that's sometimes driven by themselves, but also potentially the company culture, you know, of the company that they're in or the company that they're going to, because potentially the IRFU could have seen the fact that you're on maternity leave as a drawback, but they actually seem to have really embraced it and encouraged it. And I can feel the energy from you even when you're talking about that time in your life.
No, they have really, really good maternity policies, and actually even returning to work after having a baby, they have like a phased in sort of process where you can come in for like 1 day a week, then two, but you're actually on your full pay. So it's like an easier sort of process to ease you in. And even though I was joining the RFU having not been on maternity with them, I was still afforded all those opportunities, which for me just felt amazing, because I was like, a lot of the time when you join companies, maybe you don't access some of the benefits until you've passed probation or things like that. But no, they were really, really supportive and understanding. And, you know, I think any employer that, you know, wants to retain the best people has to have flexibility when it comes to things like family or work-life balance, because, you know, like things happen. Like just this week, he's off creche all week. So, you know, we're juggling him at home. But, you know, no one ever sort of criticizes or is like, oh, why did you move that meeting or why didn't you make that? You know, everyone understands. And maybe it's being in sport as well, that it's not a 9-to-5. You know, there's weekends, there's different things. Maybe they have that sort of understanding. But I have to say, yeah, I've been just so happy and so, I suppose, really pleasantly surprised by how easy the transition's been.
Yeah, it sounds really amazing. And I think what a lot of different organizations should aspire to, really, because it just allows you to manage your energy and have your loves in order, I suppose, and be able to perform at the top level in work and also then at home and not have any guilt or concern for either your career or your family.
Yeah, I completely agree. And like, you know, a lot of people are like, God, you're going back so early. Like, would you not want more time? I don't want to sound bad, but like I was actually bored at times on maternity leave. Like I love working. I always have, like, I'm really driven, but like, I love what I do, so I don't mind doing it. It's not a chore doing it. So like, there was times that I was bored at maternity, so like, I was really happy to get back into work. I was so excited by this new opportunity. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I'm a better person for my son when I'm happier and I'm doing that, rather than, you know, frustration of like not being at work or not being happy with what I'm doing. So yeah, look, that works for me. I mean, I don't knock anyone that stays at home with kids, because like, it probably is one of the hardest jobs. Like, I just have so much admiration for the girls in the creche, because I'm like, they're dealing with a room full of toddlers every day. But yeah, like, that wouldn't be for me. But like, I think I have a really good balance now, where I'm able to kind of pick them up and drop them to creche and still kind of manage work and everything around that as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think it just goes to show that when the flexibility is given, whatever your choice is, if you do want to stay home with your children when they're young, or if you do want to get back to the workplace, if the facilities and the flexibility is in place from an employer, it just makes that really easy. And it's a real win-win.
Yeah, absolutely.
For both. So how has life been in the IRFU? You really started at a pinnacle moment in terms of Ireland and our rugby following with the World Cup last year.
Yeah, look, obviously it was a great year for Irish rugby last year in terms of winning the Grand Slam, which I watched from afar, I suppose. I'd gotten the job, but I hadn't started. And then I was in for Rugby World Cup. So, I mean, it was absolutely amazing, like the scenes and at some of the games and like the reactions from fans. Like, honestly, it completely blew everyone away, the support that we got. So obviously it wasn't the end that we wanted. But, you know, we started well last weekend against France. You know, we've got a game against Italy at home this week, our first home game. So everything's in a great place. It's a great organization who are doing really good things. And, you know, there's lots going on. You know, the Sevens team won their first World Series title in Perth last month as well. The women's team were in sort of a rebuilding phase. So there's so much to work with. But even aside from all the rugby, like, there's so much that goes on within the organisation that I'm just really excited to be able to try and tell those stories now. Mm-hmm. And sort of look at the strategy and how I'm going to communicate that over the coming years.
And any ideas in terms of what that looks like?
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge engine behind the teams. Like, everyone sees the teams, but like, there's so many people behind it, and just the whole infrastructure and just everything to do with clubs and like the whole grassroots of which it's built on. I don't think we tell enough of those stories. So I'd love to kind of have, you know, our own content team to do that. At the moment, you know, we're using a lot of third parties or different things, but you know, I think we can probably tell our story really, really strongly. So yeah, just looking to kind of build and expand the team, hopefully over the next few years to do some of that.
Yeah, yeah. It's huge now. I think the World Cup really brought people that wouldn't identify themselves as rugby supporters necessarily out of the woodwork to support the rugby team. And yeah. I think it was comparable, and football fans will hate me for saying this, but it was comparable to some of those, you know, Italia 90 World Cup days, with the whole country planning on what they were doing on the weekend of the final. Everyone had plans.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, weren't followed through upon, but definitely there was such a sense of one team,
yeah,
and one country coming together behind.
And we were so lucky that it was so close as well in France, you know, because obviously it goes between the Southern and Northern Hemisphere every 4 years. So, you know, from a timing point of view, that we could have the games, I suppose, the times that were really good for Irish people. So, yeah, it was brilliant. But, you know, we're on to the next now and into Six Nations, and it all starts again.
Exactly, exactly. And just, you mentioned the women's team are in a rebuilding phase, and obviously there was a lot of, you know, publicity around the behind the scenes with the women's team over the last few years. How is that now, or what does that rebuilding phase look like?
Yeah, so I suppose, like most people, I was also watching that from afar, seeing everything unfold. I was actually in Australia for most of the Six Nations last year, visiting family and seeing everything that was happening with the women's team and going, oh my God, like, what am I going into? And I've made it a priority since I joined to really focus on the women's side. So I work out of Lansdowne Road. That's where like our main office is. But I also go to the High Performance Centre out on the Sport Ireland campus in Abbottstown a couple of days a week when I can as well, because a lot of the players are obviously based there. So yeah, look, they're at the start of a rebuilding. They've got a new head coach in Scott, who's come from a really good background. He was a part of the Red Roses set up in England. They're obviously one of the top teams in the world, alongside the Black Ferns in New Zealand. So, you know, Scott's come in, has got a great energy, has a great vision. You know, I think the bedrock is there. There's some really, really good players. There's new kind of coaching setup as well going in around them. They were playing in a WXV tournament in Dubai back in October, which they won. So that was great for them in terms of confidence, I think, and sort of like getting back to winning ways. And, you know, Six Nations for them this year is going to be really, really big. So I'm going to be part of the team for that. I'm going to travel with them and sort of be on hand for everything, because I'm really keen to understand, you know, the back end of it. Obviously, you were talking about high performance today. And for me, high performance has taken on a whole new dimension in the past 6 months with seeing high performance sport. So I'm just really keen to learn and understand how I can kind of support them better. Mm-hmm. But what I do is I chat directly to the girls. You know, they're incredible athletes. So I want to understand what we can do better for them, what they need from us, and, you know, just how we can kind of make their life a little easier when it comes to tournaments and prep them better for things that media that will come up. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I just spend a lot of time kind of chatting to them and sort of getting their views on things as well. So.
And is there any common themes that you would see from the women's team that emerge versus a men's team in a prominent sport like rugby?
Is there any common themes? Yeah, it's a good question, actually. I mean, I suppose the premise of what we did when I worked in Lidl on launching the thing was, you know, women do just as much. They prepare the same. They train the same. Like, and they do. Like, I mean, they do the same sort of sessions. Obviously, they're all adapted to like women's sport and women's bodies. And, you know, the two games are probably very different in terms of the men's is probably a lot more physical, whereas I do feel like the women's is maybe a little more skilled and a little more raw. So, I mean, the commonalities are there in terms of like that drive and that ambition. But I suppose the women are operating in a very different landscape. And that's, to be honest, they're not full-time professionals. I mean, they're on sort of contracts with the RFU, but a lot of them are working in their spare time as well, or kind of managing jobs and training. So the challenges for them are completely different in terms of what a week looks like. They don't just go to training every day. You know, sometimes it's like training and then they're trying to do half a day's work in the background as well. So, you know, they're very different challenges, but, you know, they're a great bunch. You know, they're really, really motivated. So I think there's some really good things to come from them in the years ahead.
Yeah, I look forward to watching the progress. You mentioned Lidl there, and back in 2016, I think, was when the sponsorship was being worked out, I think, with the LGFA. And I remember it myself before I actually left Lidl then shortly after that was implemented. How did that come about, just from your perspective? What were you looking for when you started speaking to the LGFA, or was there other sponsorships on the cards at the time?
Yeah, so I mean, we had dabbled in a couple of smaller things, you probably remember, like things here and there, sponsoring awards or kind of cycles or different things, you know, kind of more local sponsorships. But I suppose we felt at this time, you know, the recession was obviously a real turning point for Lidl. Like, you know, when we were there, like things started to really take off. And we felt like by about 2015, you know, we're at the stage now where like Irish people understand us, they accept us. We're, you know, we were still always called the German discounter, but, you know, people felt and they understood that we were part of Ireland, that we were making huge contributions to Ireland. So, you know, we said, look, now's the time, we felt, for, you know, what you'd call a marquee sponsorship. And we just started looking around the market, and we worked with an agency as well to sort of see what was out there. And Ladies Gaelic Football came up as one. And we were like, you know, obviously Gaelic football is huge in Ireland. You know, it's part of our identity, really. But, you know, we felt like the men's game was very saturated. You know, the hurling and the football both had three kind of principal partners. You know, you're not getting a lot of cut through with that. Like, you know, back in the day, you know, when I was growing up, like you had Bank of Ireland, who sponsored the football, and Guinness, who sponsored the hurling. And that was all. Whereas now it's like, now I'm not even sure I could actually mention who the three are, you know, with each of them, because they change and stuff. So Ladies Gaelic Football came up and we were like, that's interesting. Obviously, as a retailer, women are our primary target market. So, you know, there's probably a lot of ex-players who are mums, families. You know, we were like, it's an interesting demographic to look at. And actually, what I didn't know, and I don't know everyone else who was in the group at the time, but like Tesco actually were the previous sponsor. And I was like, I don't remember Tesco ever doing anything for Ladies Gaelic Football.
I don't remember that either.
Yeah, and like we would have been in and out of Tesco stores all the time looking, you know, on competitor visits and stuff. And you were like, I never remember seeing anything. And I remember the discussion happening and, you know, it was, ladies, is there a big enough market? You know, it's not that hugely popular, you know. But we were like, I felt like there was real potential there. But I said, and I always remember saying, if we're going to do it, can we just do it properly? I don't want it to look like an act of charity. And so it was sort of, the more we kind of looked at it, the more we kind of went, you know what, I think there's something in this. But, and I started chatting to like family and friends who were playing or had kind of links with clubs and kind of said, you know, what does support look like really? And, you know, it was really basic stuff. They're like, we need kits, like we need snacks, like we don't have access to the same things that men do. And that was where the whole campaign kind of came about then. So it all kind of got together pretty quickly. I mean, within the space of a couple of months, the agreement was done and we were like, how do we launch it? And, you know, it just went from there and, you know, it completely snowballed. I mean, I think it took us all by surprise how quickly it took off. But I do think it's become a real like benchmark for women in sport and for the whole industry in Ireland. And I think it has made brands look up and notice and say there is something in women's sport. I still think there's a lot of like lip service given to women's sport, a lot of people saying, oh, yeah, no, we want to support it, but they're not actually following through on that. So I'm really keen to see what women's rugby, where we can take it in the next few years in terms of, you know, building up the sponsor base, maybe having it more distinct from the men, but actually having direct campaigns for women as well. Instead of, you know, it being a campaign featuring both men and women, I think they're different sports, you know, there's different audiences. So, you know, they should have their own identity.
Yeah, definitely. And I really feel that the LGFA sponsorship with Lidl is one of the most groundbreaking sponsorships in terms of impact. Was it the following year or the year after that Croke Park was full for the ladies football final?
So
after the sponsorship,
it's never been full. So they've never got to max, like, I think it's 82,000 for Croke Park. I feel like it got into 60s. But I mean, the numbers have gone up significantly over the years. And I mean, it is phenomenal. I mean, there was one year it was like the biggest attended female sports event in the world. That's since been eclipsed by something else. But there was at one stage, it was, I think, around maybe 2018, 2019. So
it was the biggest attended female sports event in the world.
Yeah.
The ladies Gaelic football
final.
That
in one particular year. Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. And I obviously, you see globally, the trends are shifting as well. Like there was a volleyball game in Nebraska or something that had like 90,000 or something, like broke a world record recently because they put everything into it. So yeah, look, I mean, I think the possibilities are there. Like, you know, I think there's a lot that can be done. And I just, yeah, I feel like it's probably a good turning point for women in sport in time. The last couple of years have been huge.
And what advice would you give to somebody who is working in a similar role to yourself in a different organization, who are looking to really make an impact with a sponsorship? Because you mentioned previous to the LGFA sponsorship.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Companies have a tendency to either sponsor a lot locally and there's no overall impact either for the company or very little for the local sponsorships, or you just put money to put your brand name beside something similar to, say, for example, some sponsors of football teams, etc. So what advice would you give to somebody who really wants to go out there and make an impact on something that they feel passionate about but needs that support?
Talk to the people on the ground, talk to the people involved, like the people who are the grassroots of that organization. It's well and good like looking up company websites and saying, oh, we could do that, or talking to like boards or senior managers, but actually talk to the people that it impacts, because very often you get the better insights from them as to what they need or what sort of support looks like. And sometimes it is those really, really simple things. Like for a lot of ladies football teams, it was, as I said, kits. So it was like, how can we do fundraising or do initiatives that can get them kits? And it was like tokens and things like that, that, you know, once they collected tokens, they were getting access to kits designed for them. Like, so yeah, it's like, it's understanding the impact that you can have. I think, you know, putting up a hoarding at the side of a pitch, like, that's fine if you want that in a local area. But like, if you want to make an impact, you need to understand what that looks like for the people that it should affect.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And a question I ask all the guests on the podcast is that I believe every woman embodies high performance. What do you think and why?
I think everyone has the potential to, but I don't think everyone taps into their own potential. You know, I think you have to find something that you're passionate about to unlock that. And I think if you don't, or if you think, you know, for me, I kind of always go back to like when I was in school, I always had a really clear mind of what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I always remember starting secondary school when I was picking my subjects. And I said to my mom, I was like, I wrote down the four, I had to pick four options. And my mom said, you have to do science. And I said, but I don't want to do science. I don't like science. And I never want to work in anything with science, because she was a nurse. And I was like, I never want to do anything. She's like, no, you have to do science. There's so much of the world, you know, there's so much that you don't understand about it. And I was like, no, I don't want to do it. And in the end, she actually took my form off me and she crossed out my fourth choice and she put in science.
How did that go?
I hate it. I hate it. And I always remember the first day of school in secondary school, the science teacher was my, like, the teacher from my class as well, like our form teacher or whatever. And I remember somebody in the first science class saying, oh, I don't want to do science. My parents made me do it. And she went mental at them. And I was like, I'm never, ever saying that I was made do it as well. And I hated it for the 3 years. Like, I did not enjoy any of biology, physics or chemistry. I absolutely hated it. Like, I was fine. I managed to get through. And I, you know, I can't remember what I got in my juniors, or maybe a B or something, but I got through it. But when I was getting to like narrowing down my subjects for Leaving Cert, I said to my mom, I'm absolutely not taking any science subjects because I don't enjoy them. I'll have to work too hard for it. And for Leaving Cert, you know, unfortunately, it's a points race. I need to do subjects that I'm good at. And I said, I'm never going to do anything in any of those subjects anyway. So that's what I did. And I had a really strong gut feeling. And I always kind of think for people as well, like, go with your gut and like do something that you love. I loved subjects like history and English. And that's what stood to me now in my career, because I don't mind writing things. I don't mind researching things. But, you know, I just think you need to go with your gut, understand what you like doing and what you're good at, and play to your strengths. Because if you're doing something that you love, again, another cliche, but like, you never, it just never feels like work.
Yeah, it's very true. I think from how you're describing that, you seem to be quite in touch with what those strengths are, or intuitively even what your gut instinct is. For somebody who may not be as intuitive or feels maybe pressurized or is ticking the societal boxes because they feel that's what is expected of them, what advice would you have for them in terms of being able to tune in to what it is that brings them joy, or things that they de-energizes them?
Yeah. For me, it's having a really good network of people around me, not just friends, but like people who can challenge me and can tell me when I'm wrong or push me to think differently. And, you know, I think you need those people around you who can kind of bring you back down to earth as well. Yeah, like, I think, I don't know exactly what it is. I've always been very strong-willed. I've always known that, but I don't know if I'd know how to tell someone to go and find that.
Yeah.
So
yeah. You're lucky that it is a strong will. So in terms of the balance now with being a mother to a 15-month-old boy, starting a new role, you mentioned their weekends, you mentioned, you know, it's sports, it's not 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. How do you balance everything?
Yeah, like I says, I'm one of those really organized people. Like, I'd like to sit down and sort of be like, okay, what's the week ahead look like, and plan everything out. My boyfriend's the exact opposite. Like, I got a little whiteboard and I was like, we can write everything up. And he's like, a whiteboard? He was like, I'm not fucking writing things on a whiteboard. And I was like, but we need to know. Like, we now need to plan, like, who's dropping them to crash, who's collecting them. Like, we can't have this situation where it's like, oh, someone's forgotten to collect them. So for me, it's planning, even though he doesn't. But I want to know, like, have I got time on Saturday to go and do a reformer class before I go do something else? Mm-hmm. But like, also, like, you know, he's quite an easy baby. So I bring him to a lot of things. Like, I went to Ashbourne Rugby Club last week. They were having a celebration of women in rugby. Mm-hmm. Like, he came with me. Like, I'll go to the captain's run in Aviva tomorrow. I'll probably bring him to that because, you know, a lot of like players, their families and stuff are there as well. So where I can, I want to expose him to those sort of things as well. He's come to loads of women's games. You know, I want him to grow up, I suppose, seeing all that as well. And I don't want him to feel like that work is just something you do when you come back. Like, for me, work is a part of my life almost because I love rugby as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I like to, you know, I want to factor in time for myself and I don't make any apologies for that. So like yesterday, for example, I left the house really early because I was like, I wanted to go and do a gym session before work. And that's fine because, you know, my partner was there and he was, you know, looking after him in the morning. So yeah, for me, it's just, it's good planning. I, you know, obviously things come up and like you have to be adaptable as well. But I just like to have sort of fixed in my mind what maybe 60% of my week is going to look like.
And what would you say over the years, either personally or professionally, has been the biggest challenge or struggle for you that you've overcome?
I definitely, a couple of years ago, would have went through a stage where I just wasn't happy with myself. I wasn't happy in work. You know, I think I was just probably a little lost. I didn't have, I suppose, I had been in the role for a while. I probably needed a new challenge and stuff. And I think even in myself, I wasn't happy. I was like a bit overweight. I just wasn't in sort of a good routine with myself. And I sort of just, I kind of sat myself down, or I had a good friend as well at the time. And I was like, I need to kind of get myself together. And, you know, I think when you're not happy in your personal life, it does impact on everything else.
Yeah.
And I felt like in work at that time as well, I wasn't performing to my best. And I just, you know, sat down and was like, well, what do I need? And, you know, I'm not saying it's the same for everyone, but for me, I was like, if I can lose a bit of weight, if I can just feel more confident in myself, I think I'll just be happier and I'll be more productive. And that's what it was for me. It was just about kind of looking at my habits around eating. You know, I wouldn't have been the best at doing things like meal prep, you know, I kind of just, or planning my food for the week, even though ironically I worked obviously in retail with a supermarket. But I just, so if for me, it was like looking at my habits and how I could do better. And that's something I kind of stuck to then. And, you know, I found that once I got into a routine of it, it sort of worked for me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as I started seeing the changes, that really kind of motivated me. And then I feel like that sort of supercharged me in a professional sense as well, because I just felt so much better and I just felt so much more energized as well, and was like then looking for new challenges and new things to do. So yeah, like that was a period, I suppose, for me that I found really challenging, but I found a way to overcome it. And I think as well, as I said, for me, I had really good people around me who could see maybe that I was maybe struggling a bit as well, and sort of didn't sort of say it to me bluntly, but like, you know, had conversations and kind of helped me through that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like you've a really good network.
Yeah.
And good connections, which is really, really important. So just in terms of your own experiences and life lessons, what three key pieces of advice would you give to anybody listening now in terms of their own personal or professional life?
Yeah. The first I would say is like, don't be afraid to take a chance or a risk, you know, and put yourself out there. I think it can be really daunting and you can feel really nervous. But like when I was applying for the job in the RFU, I was like, you know, I was kind of like, am I mad? I've got a 3 week old baby. Like, do I need this right now? But I was like, I might always wonder, could I have gotten that job? And I was like, I don't want that regret, or I don't want to wonder. So yeah, like just put yourself out there. Like even when I finished my postgrad, I was doing postgrad in events and public relations, and I really wanted to get into event management. And I just started emailing companies saying like, I'll work for free if you've got events, I just want to get experience. And I was really lucky that a company contacted me called the Hospitality Partnership, who were doing the corporate hospitality for the RFU at the time, ironically. So it's like, yeah, full circle. And they were like, yeah, like, we'll keep, you know, they kind of were like, yeah, we'll keep you on the list and blah, blah, blah. You know, you just one of those standard responses. But about 2 or 3 weeks later, they're like, actually, we have a job because someone's going on maternity leave and we just have a couple of projects. Like, would you be interested? And I was still doing my course at this stage, but I was like, so I went to my lecturers and I was like, look, I'm interviewing for this job. And they said, look, just go through the process and see what happens. And I got offered the job, and then my lecturers were like, well, you know, like it was like a couple of hours a day of a course. Like it was sort of like almost semi part time. But they were like, look, we'll help you sort of juggle if you want to work and you want to do this, because there was only a couple of weeks left and we had to do an internship anyway after this. So I ended up kind of for about 6 weeks working and doing the rest of college, because I was like, it's good experience. And like that turned into me staying with their sister company into a PR agency. So, you know, I put myself out there, but then, you know, it was I got something back from it. You know, yeah. I got amazing experiences with them. I got to build like a whole network as well around that. So for me, like taking a chance or taking a risk, like don't be afraid to do it. I think as well, like women look at job specs for something and say, oh, they're looking for 5 things and I've got 3, so I won't apply because I haven't got all the experience. Like men might only have 1 thing out of the 5 and they'll apply. So like you need to back yourself.
There's actually research on that,
yeah,
believe it or not. It's linked to credentialitis is when we look at a job spec for something, we are prone to picking out all of the things that we can't do.
Yeah.
And the research proves that when a male looks at the same same job spec, they'll look at the things they can do and forget the rest.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. And it's, I think, a really important thing to highlight is to look at all the things you can do, because you learn the rest.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a lot of the time it's will over skill as well. You
Absolutely.
Know, if you have the attitude to learn, you can adapt and grow within a role.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I think the other advice I'd give is like, always be able to ask for feedback and take it. Like, never be too proud to go to someone. Like, for me at the moment, I'm confident in communications and communication strategies. I know nothing about high performance sport. So like, I'm constantly going asking questions, and that's why I want to go with the women's team as well and like be fully integrated in their setup, because I want to understand more. So like, if something's not going right, like, I'll have to be big enough to understand that, or, you know, with the media, if something happens. So always kind of be able to take the feedback and reflect on it and act on it. I think if you're asked to go and get feedback, you know, if I've told people in the past, go and get feedback from that person and they don't do it, to me, that says like, that's someone who doesn't want to grow. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, that's true.
And then I think the last one is, as I said, you know, for me, it's really important to have a good network, like surround yourself with good people, but like not just people who will tell you you're amazing and that you're doing a great job, but people who will say, no, I think you could have done better there, or have you thought about this? So like, it's really important to have people who are honest with you.
And how do you do that? Because I think as a society in Ireland, for example, we're very good at being nice and polite. And even with people's closest family or friends at times, people won't be honest or tell the hard truth because they're afraid of hurting somebody's feelings. How do you set that environment up with your friends or family to foster that culture of feedback, very business term for a personal relationship, but how does that work for you?
Yeah, I probably don't do it with family per se, because like that, we're probably, no one wants to kind of fall out or like hurt each other's feelings. But I suppose professionally in the past, when there've been people who I've clashed with, and you know, in Lidl, we would have done the insights colours, so you knew straight away like who your opposite was. You know, I made a point of like seeking out those people sometimes, or like trying to understand how I could, I suppose the insights gave a real insights obviously into how they think, and it made me sort of go, okay, just because I think that way, you know, they have a completely different point of view. So I like sought those people out to understand. So I think, and then I developed really good relationships with people because of that, and it was just understanding where they're coming from. And it's a lot the same when you're managing a team. Like, I'm quite, you know, a hands-off type of leader. Like, I've been micromanaged, so I knew that I never wanted to be a micromanager. But then sometimes I do have people on my team, and I have in the past, who want that bit more guidance. Like, they want me to sort of guide them a bit more. So you sometimes have to just find a balance. Like, it takes a while to get there. You know, you're not just going to walk up to someone and say, I don't get on with you, so can you just give me feedback? You know, you just have to find ways to build a relationship with those people, and then use it to your advantage. I suppose the fact that they have differing views to you and can give you different perspectives.
Yeah, I think sometimes we don't focus on how we have a relationship. We probably focus on what we need to get done.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's really interesting. And it's great to have that honest feedback, but it also is great that you're able to take the feedback, whether it be positive or constructive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just in terms of any book recommendations, would you have for what book recommendation would you have for listeners?
I just literally finished a really good one called Good for a Girl, which was written by Lauren Fleshman, might be her name. So she was an American elite runner. And it was given to me by a girl that I work with called Kate. And it's just about how high performance really was built around men and their needs. So she was actually like a sponsored athlete for Nike. But, you know, when women like runners were pregnant, they were classed as being like seriously injured and they weren't paid, you know. So she's just trying to break down, I suppose, the system. And also she talks a lot about how girls' bodies change when they hit puberty, and, you know, they go through these phases. And it was just, that was really interesting, just for me, I suppose, because it was high performance and also that sport element.
Yeah, good for a girl.
Good for a girl, yeah. And then the other one I kind of have gone back to over the years is, I suppose, a classic, really, like Lean In, Sheryl Sandberg's book. Mm. Like, I read a lot of stuff, but there's not always a lot of stuff that gets retained. But there's like always something from that book that has stood out for me. And that was that, like, women get promoted based on what they've achieved, but men get promoted based on what people think is their potential. So, like, women have to work so much harder to get promoted.
And that was from Lean In.
Yeah, that was from Lean In. And I do think that's true. Like, I think, and I've seen it before where it's like, you see people are like, oh my God, how did he get promoted? Like, she's been doing, you know, but it is, it's like, people are like, oh, well, he's got so much potential. So for me, yeah, that was a really good book. It's a long time since I've read it, but I've probably read it a couple of times at various points in my career because I've taken different things at different times.
Yeah, I think it was one of those books. I think I read it in 2010. No, it was later. Sorry, it was 2016. I remember I was in the US and it was over a weekend and I read it. And again, the things that everybody takes from the book is very different. The one thing I took from it at the time was that even when females are 19, 20 years old, they may not have even ever been in a relationship and they're starting off in their career, they're still thinking about what happens if I get pregnant? What would I say to people? You know, it will hold me back. And that there was so many things in it that I read and thought, wow,
yeah,
everybody feels like that. And I kind of felt a little bit more connected to being a female in business. And some of what the podcasts we hope to achieve is to have those conversations and bring some of those things kind of into the light a little bit more. Interestingly enough, I read an article recently about Lean In that, you know, now it's kind of seen as dated, that it's, you know, its time has passed and the idea of women having it all is no longer seen as feasible, etc. But I would recommend it to everybody to read because, as you say, there's different nuggets that you can take from it that really resonate and hit home. And I suppose the rest of whether there's criticism now or not is up to the individual to assess for themselves.
But I think it takes, that book was for a point in time, like everything is at a point in time, you know, nothing really stays the same because thinking evolves and things evolve. So at its time, that was a really groundbreaking book. And I say, maybe it's not as relevant now, but there's still parts of it that resonate, or maybe it's paved the way for things to have gotten better
because
it provoked conversations back when it came out.
Yeah.
And the last one I would recommend is a book on kind of mindset. You know, would have done a lot of work on this in the past. I think it's by Carol Dweck, who'd be one of the kind of real kind of names in this area. And it was just called Mindset, How You Can Fulfill Your Potential. So that was one, because it's looking at, I suppose, the difference between growth and fixed mindsets, which is just something that I think is really important as well for people to have that sort of growth mindset.
Yeah, great book. Great book. And it's short enough that you can read it quite quickly as well. And then my final question, Aoife, is what one other high performing woman should I be speaking to on this podcast and why?
I don't think I could pick just one because I suppose I'm like, it's easy for me, I suppose, now because I'm in sport. I'm like, OK, there's any host of like women within rugby that would be amazing, from like, you know, current players like Lucy, who's the captain of the Sevens, Dervla, who's on the women's 15s, you know, because I see a lot, I suppose, now in the background of like, especially when like someone gets an injury that's like a significant injury that they're going to be out for like maybe a year, just with how they're dealing with that, the resilience. And a couple of other names I kind of was thinking of as well as more from like my background in business, you know, Dia Hearn, who's the CEO of Barrettstown, who are a charity that we worked with in Lidl, is really, really impressive. And especially, I suppose, in the charity sector, it's really difficult. It's a difficult sector to be in. But I think she's a really, really inspiring leader, and how she's sort of shaped Barrettstown and sort of brought it on over the years is brilliant. And also then, I suppose, from within sort of industry as well, and she's a friend as well, but Deirdre Ryan, who's a director of sustainability with Board Bia. I worked with her in Lidl. I think you might have just crossed over for like a couple
of
weeks.
Yeah,
but like she, I suppose, uniquely was a high performance athlete. She's an Olympian. She competed.
I never knew that. Yeah. I never knew that about Deirdre.
She's the Irish high jump record holder still.
Wow.
Yeah, she competed in London 2012. So like she was a high performance athlete and is now transferred over and is like a super powerhouse in terms of like sustainability. And that's like a really interesting and evolving area as well. So I couldn't just pick just one.
That's amazing though, because they all sound really inspirational and I'd love to speak to each of them. So I'll add it to my list of emails that I'll be doing over the next few weeks. So but it's been really great seeing you again.
Yeah, you too.
And it's been really great chatting to you, and I wish you all the best in the Six Nations and also in the new role and with everything that you put your mind to.
Thanks so much, John. Look forward to listening to the rest of the podcast.
Thanks so much. I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. You can join the High Performance Woman tribe by subscribing, liking and sharing podcasts with your friends and family. and by following me at High Performance Woman on Instagram and TikTok. I'll see you next time.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.